This is Bengals Line.
Let's talk football.
On the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network.
Let's talk football.
Live at the Holy Grail. Brought to you by the Holy Grail. Cincinnati's home for sports.
Touchdown, Bengals!
This is 700 WLW, the home of the best Bengals coverage.
And away we go, 6:05 on 700 WLW. We are live from the Holy Grail. Banks, listen to the crowd. Great to have everybody here. It's another Bengals Line from the Holy Grail Banks on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham. And Dave, we knew going in it was going to be difficult. We got a sense with the inactives being posted, including Preston Brown, it was going to be even more difficult. By the time A.J. Green went down, you knew it was going to be a really difficult day. And yet, having said all that, the Bengals kind of regrouped, settled things, had a chance in it late into the game, just didn't get it done and stand 2-1 tonight.
Yeah, it's unfortunate in that the self-destruction occurred with the turnovers. Three that were, you know, significant during the course of the football game. The last one was a Hail Mary where basically the football game was over. And I thought Luke Kuechly would spike it fourth down. Spike the thing they always say. I mean, what if he bobbled the interception and Bengals catch it for a touchdown? But he decided to pick it off. He had a clear path at the interception. He made the interception, and that was the end of the football game. Actually, I take it back. It was third and two. I thought it was fourth down. It was third and two on the Hail Mary. So, but even so, a lot of times you knock them down and don't take a chance on anything being rattled around in the end zone and getting a freaky play out of it. But Sam Hubbard clean on the block punt potential and just is so concerned about not roughing the punter, he changes his angle a little bit and hits his elbow. The punt hits his elbow and still goes 30 yards, and Alex Erickson has to fair catch the thing, and Carlos Dunlap, quarterback sack, strip. Sam Hubbard, right there. I mean, he's on his hands and knees and goes for it. It was slippery with the humidity and everything. It squirts away. And I'll tell you what, Cam Newton got heavily criticized in the Super Bowl when Von Miller knocked the ball out of his hands in a sack and he didn't go for the football. He got killed. He got skewered. Look at Cam Newton. What was he thinking? The ball's right there. He doesn't go after the football. He went after this one, and he recovered that football, that big beast. He got underneath everybody and recovered the ball. So he learned his lesson in that Super Bowl about, you know, don't assume anything and get after it when the ball's on the ground. So he recovered that one. But two plays, huge plays in the fourth quarter when it's still a one-score game where even though you're minus three in the turnover department at that point, you're still in the football game because your offense is playing decently. I mean, you know, they're doing some things, getting some things done, throwing the ball for over 350 yards. But turnovers and the running game of the Carolina Panthers, Lance, that running game was a sight to behold.
Had I told you a week ago tonight Carolina would rush it 41 times for 230 yards, whew,
I'd be stunned.
Yeah.
And McCaffrey go for over 180 of it. I might have been okay with, okay, McCaffrey gets 100, Cam gets 100.
Sure.
It's kind of split up. But he goes for a buck 80 plus 28 carries. I mean, got to give North Turner credit. He said, all right, we used him as a receiver. He had 14 catches, 12 out of the backfield. They're going to prepare for the perimeter, him as a receiver out of the backfield. We're going to pound him right between the tackles. 28 times he runs the football for over 180 yards. With that zone read thing and the way they executed it, Cam Newton at the mesh point was meshing with him past the line of scrimmage before he pulled it out of there. He basically willed the linebackers to make a bad decision. And really, the offensive line were sustaining their block so well that he could ride that RPO, the run pass option, as long as he possibly could before pulling it out of there. So I'll tell you, they had a great game plan, North Turner, and it was executed to perfection. It's interesting. Cam Newton, first pick of his draft, 2011. McCaffrey, eighth pick of his draft. Two top 10 picks. They're picked high for a reason. The Bengals' ninth pick of his draft didn't work out so well. So you had three top 10 picks. Two are on the plus end of things. The ninth pick of the draft, and I'm talking about John Ross, had some issues. So he didn't step up and play like the other two top 10 picks for the Carolina Panthers during the course of that football game.
Is it, and no disrespect to any other linebackers in that group, but that's a day where you needed a Preston Brown, and you could have certainly used a Vontaze Burfict with their experience, ability to decipher, read, react, all of that stuff.
You know, we asked, Coach Austin was with the media today. He had a press conference before we had the locker room was open, and he basically took the bullet. He said, I didn't put guys in good enough position. I didn't coach them well enough. Bottom line is they weren't disciplined enough. You know, Cam got them out of their areas of responsibility because of his excellence with the ball handling, how long he was able to hold that mesh point, and then McCaffrey with his short space quickness making people miss. But with the football IQ of Vontaze Burfict and the football IQ of Preston Brown and the physical ability of both of them, they're both 250-pound-plus linebackers that can move well. So you get downhill numbers that might have made a difference. He refused to say that. He said, that's speculation. I'm not going to go there. I have to deal with the players that I've got, and we have to coach them up, and they have to make plays, and we didn't do it. We had a stinker of a day. They are dead last in the NFL and third down still. Mm. Dead last after this Sunday's action going into this Monday night football game. So they're going to have to get better against the run. They're going to have to get better on third down for sure. There's no question about it.
52.2% allowed on third down defensively.
Interestingly enough, and Atlanta's 31st.
48-8 or somewhere in that neighborhood.
So whose defense is going to step up and get off the football field? And, you know, you look at it, the best way to handle the Bengals' offense, I mean, the game starts, they're 1-2-3 and out.
Yeah.
And the Bengals go 11 plays, only face third down one time. Third and three, 9-yard pass to A.J., score. I mean, 11 plays, 75 yards, time off the clock. So, North Turner's saying, we got to run the ball. We got to keep our defense off the field. We can't let them go through them like a hot knife through butter all the time like that. So, man, he went to his 1-2 punch of McCaffrey and Cam. And honestly, those were the two guys the entire week that they were prepping against. And I honestly believed that with Jeff Driskel, at 6'4", 235 pounds, athletic, I thought that they were going to get a good look at what Cam Newton might be like, because Driskel's a great athlete, and he was Cam Newton in that RPO stuff. But until you see the ball handling in live action and it's full speed live action, you think you're simulating it, and then you have Quentin Flowers, who's McCaffrey, 5'10", 210, just like McCaffrey, 205 like McCaffrey, very elusive, played quarterback, played, you know, Wildcat. I thought they had two good looks, two good guys to give the defense looks. But, man, once it became a live battle down there in Charlotte, woo, different ball game.
You know, and to the point of size and strength of Cam Newton, watching his keeper for score where he goes up the middle, to watch contact with Sean Williams and to see Cam just continue on in like it's really no big deal, it gives you an appreciation of just how – big and strong that dude is.
Amazing. I mean, he gives the, you know, Superman deal. He pulls his shirt, you know, pretends he's pulling his shirt and showing the S on his chest. He is. I mean, I watched him in warm-ups. He looked like Carlos Dunlap. And Carlos is, you know, 290 and great. I mean, very, very little body fat. Cam Newton is the most imposing quarterback figure I've ever seen in my life. Watching him run around and warm up.
Wow. Who is this?
Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here.
Let's take a timeout. 6:13 on 700 WLW. 6:17 on 700 WLW from the Holy Grail Banks. It is Bengals Line on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Let's give it up to security, who handled a rather bizarre situation with somebody who I don't know if he came in off the street or was in the house, but was rather worked up. And security and a number of folks in the house took care of him on the floor in front of us. And they've He's now out of the building, and we carry on. I think we're all good. Everybody good?
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're all good.
I'll tell you what, you guys, it looked like UCF, UFC. You guys looked awesome out there.
Some fast action by those in the crowd and by security. So thank you, and that matter taken care of. We pick up where we left off with the Bengals 31-21 loss yesterday. We forgot to tell everybody, Dave, who's coming up in hour number two is our player guest tonight.
Hour number two is our star of the game, basically. I mean, Tyler Boyd was phenomenal. Tyler Boyd had a career high. Tyler Boyd on the day was targeted seven times. He had six catches, 132 yards, averaged 22 yards a catch, had the 49-yarder when Andy Dalton got out of pocket, and he had a touchdown pass of 27 when Andy got out of pocket again. Those improvisational plays were huge. And right now, he leads the Bengals in receiving yards. He's ahead of A.J. Green in terms of receiving yards. Tyler Boyd, 249 yards in the season, top 15 in the NFL. How about that? He's got two touchdown receptions, tied for seventh in the league. A.J. Green with his four touchdown passes still tied for first in the NFL.
And Dave, we talked about this last week, and we'll talk about it with Tyler when he gets here. I'm real happy to see him work through what was a difficult season last year, grab the momentum at the end of the season, and clearly carry that into this season with what he's getting done.
Absolutely. I mean, I think A.J. Green made mention of it. He said, I've seen a young person grow into a man, you know, and in every sense of the word, not just football player, but he did. He had to work through some things, and he's come out the other side in a much better state in every way, shape, or form. And I'll tell you what, he and Andy Dalton have some unbelievable chemistry going on. I mean, it's almost like mental telepathy going on now between those two guys. Not only on the scramble drill, but just in general. I mean, Andy's very, very comfortable. They ended the season on a high note with that 49-yard touchdown on fourth down, fourth and 12, to beat Baltimore, and they picked right up where they left off, and it really is a beautiful thing to watch.
I know Andy had the four interceptions, and I've had a lot of, oh, it was a bad day for Andy. And my response has been, did you watch the game? And I'm not making excuses for Andy. I think Andy had a pretty damn good day with what he created on the run, made some throws that were dimes. I didn't come away from it saying Andy had a four interception day. I came away with it going, damn, Andy put him in a position. They actually had a chance late in the game to win the thing,
yeah,
or at least tie the thing.
I think if you say, and I've gotten the same thing, like, oh, same old Andy Dalton, you know, four interceptions, was waiting for that to happen. But if you ask any other quarterback at any level, NFL, college, high school, watch the tape, how many of those interceptions do you blame on Andy Dalton? I would think the consensus would be very few, not just a majority. I think a big consensus. Marvin Lewis, I think, put it very, very well. He did with me in the interview in the post game, and he did it today in the press conference as well when he was being interviewed. He said, everybody has to protect the quarterback. And when he said that to me in the locker room, I'm like, that's a good way to put it. I said, not just the offensive lineman and pass protection, but the receivers and everybody else, they have to make sure that the quarterback's protected with what they do. Correct. I mean, that's it. I mean, if the quarterback decides to throw the football to you, if you're not going to catch it, you have to make sure the other team does not, if at all possible. If you're within the same zip code of the defensive player, you have to reverse roles and play defensive back and make sure that he does not catch it. And, you know, there was some betrayal there in terms of what went on between quarterback and receiver yesterday.
And there's no question along those lines, and you talked about it with the same page with Andy and Tyler, there is a trust Andy has with Tyler Boyd. There's
right.
No doubt about that.
And A.J. Green.
Yes.
I mean, to make the throws that he's made to A.J. since they've been in the league.
Yep.
I mean, that's as good a tandem quarterback-to-receiver duo in the NFL since 2011. And Tyler Boyd is right there. I mean, you know, he's coming on strong. He is – I think that Andy would tell you that those are the two receivers he feels the most comfortable throwing the football to. Now you throw Tyler Eifert in there as a tight end slash wide receiver based on where you're lining him up in the formation and detaching or whatever else. And I thought that was another bright spot of the offense. Tyler Eifert and the three tight end package in general. Every single one of them made catches. Every single one of them were involved in the blocking. I thought C.J. Uzomah had one of the best games he's had as a Cincinnati Bengal. I thought Tyler Eifert is really coming into form as a receiver. He was targeted, I think, 7 or 8 times and had a half a dozen catches himself in the football game. So, you know, that's building. That's coming back. Tyler was targeted 8 times, 6 catches, 74 yards, including a 20-yarder.
And Dave, how about the three of them combined, 11 targets. They made 9 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown. That's getting it done from a tight end group.
It is. And really a lot of, like, CJ stuff. This year, the play-action pass is really built into the running game. I mean, it is the same. It's the same look in the running game. They're doing play-action pass. Sometimes teams get caught up in, I'm just going to play-action pass for the sake of it, fake a run that, geez, they don't even run that one. They don't even have a run like that. This is, C.J. Uzomah's coming across the backfield to block the defensive end, kick him out in a run play, and then he runs underneath him. It's the exact same look to everybody up front at the linebacker level. Then he ducks underneath him, and he gets out in the route. Andy Dalton gets out of pocket. He knows that defensive end is unblocked. That's my hot read. I'm getting the ball out of my hand. It's almost like running an option off that defensive end in the passing game. And he's hitting C.J. Uzomah, and C.J.'s getting it up the football field for big yards after the catch. It's really good. Everything's tied into each other. I think Bill Lazor has put together a heck of a playbook, and I think his game plans have been on spot every single week. And I think Andy Dalton feels exceptionally comfortable executing it.
Dave, my immediate reaction on the play action that was the touchdown to C.J. Uzomah, it was so good.
Yep.
I laughed because the CBS cameraman on TV, he got lost, and I flashed back to Boomer Esiason, who used to do that all the time to the NBC camera guys, because Boomer was so good with the sleight of hand, where's the ball? And you'd see the camera go like that, and that's what happened yesterday.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before. The common denominator between Sam Weiss was excellent with those big hands, and he was a great magician, press the digitation, hide the ball. Sam Weiss mentored Kenny Anderson, big hands, good play-action guy. Boomer Esiason, Joe Montana, Steve DeBerg, all of them were outstanding in the play-action game with the quarterback's contribution to it, really hiding the football, like Cam Newton was doing yesterday with that mesh point, holding on to that ball the last second with those big hands and then pulling it out of there. Because, you know, at some point McCaffrey's thinking, I got to clamp on this thing. I got to get going. So, I mean, Cam has to pull it out of there. And Cam's big enough and strong enough to pull it out of there. And he was waiting as long as he possibly could to make a determination. A lot of times, 28 times, he left it in there. But other times, he was pulling it out of there and doing something himself.
13 carries, 46 passes. It did get to a 2-score game. What did you think about the final numbers of 13 to 46? Did they get away from it? Did the score more indicate that? What did you make out of it?
My problem, you know, 13 rushes, and this was interesting. Giovanni Bernard had 12 carries for 61 yards, averaged 5.1 a carry. He had a 23-yard carry, a 22-yard carry, and a 12-yard carry. So three of his 12 carries went for 57 yards. The other 9 went for 4 yards.
Ooh.
So there wasn't enough consistency with the running game for, I think, Bill to feel real comfortable staying with it. And when you look at it, the weakness, and it was proven, I think, if to attack was the back end of that Carolina Panther defense. So even though, you know, it was never really more than a 1-score game for a good part of that football game, I think they felt that the best way to attack to get back into the game or stay in the game, you know, because honestly, Carolina was running the ball, converting on third down, and their possession numbers were going to be small. So it's like, we got to do something. I mean, they're scoring on us. We got to score, and we have to do it quickly. Best way to do that is to throw the football. So I think it was the overall, you know, circumstances of the game as much as anything.
And I'll tell you what, Mark Walton, he had a nice run, a nice spinning run for about 8 yards, and that was the play that Redmond holds on, and that was a killer of a hold at that point of the game.
Bingo. That was another play I think that is underrated. Huge call. Put it in my play-by-play sheet here. It ended up being a 17-yard penalty because he basically cut it back behind Redmond for 7 yards.
Yep.
And the referee made the call. The referee threw the flag, and he said Redmond's block allowed him to make that cut by his vision. So it became a 17-yard penalty. Instead of having the ball at the 18-yard line of Carolina, second down and 3, it's now first and 20 from the 35.
Mm.
And now it ends up third and 20. You know, you're 3 straight incompletions, third and 20 from the 35. You miss a 53-yard field goal. Massive. So not only the holding penalty, but, you know, and Marvin mentioned it today, basically, you know, Bullock got a contract extension to make these 53-yarders, and he said, you know, special teams performance was pretty solid, nothing real good or real bad, other than, you know, we got to make that field goal. That's a big play in the football game, and would have cut it to a 4-point game at that point.
Is that not, though, my immediate reaction at the time was 53 was an awfully big ask of Bullock, and the defense had settled down a little bit at that point. My initial thought in my mind was punt it and play defense because you're playing it well versus asking a 53-yarder out of Randy Bullock.
Yeah, but he's been hitting them in practice, in warm-ups, and
it's
his kickoffs.
Still, even if he makes it, they're still down by four, so they still needed a touchdown.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, it seems like I think in that type of a game, you're thinking every possession, you know, you have to score. And I think that he's thinking about still winning. He's not thinking about tying. He's thinking if we kick the field goal, we get another possession, you know, geez, we might be able to win this football game. So, I guess, you know, he gets criticized for being conservative as a defensive-oriented coach. And then when he's aggressive, you know, it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
It's one of those hindsight's always 20-20 kind of things. You know, you can make good arguments either way. There's no question about it. But I think he really felt good about Randy Bullock making that field goal based on the way he was booming his kickoffs. He's now tied for the lead in the NFL with touchbacks on kickoffs because the Bengals have been scoring so much. He's had a lot of opportunities to kick off, and he is burying them. I mean, 85-90% of his kickoffs are through the back of the end zone. He is crushing the football. So they didn't think that it was, you know, anywhere near out of his range. He just pulled it a little bit. He overcooked it, you know, overswung, and you do that. You know, golfers do that after tee box. I'm guilty. You overswing, and I think he, even though you tell yourself nice, smooth, and easy, you know, your adrenaline's rushing and pumping, and you overswing.
All right, hang tight. Much more to get to. Got to get a check on news. Tyler Boyd will join us in the 7 o'clock hour. Time for you to get here. We do it till 9. It's Bengals Line from the Holy Grail Banks, First Star Logistics, Bengals Radio Network, and 700 WLW. 6:37 on 700 WLW in the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. It's Bengals Line from Holy Grail Banks. Got a great crowd tonight. We've got prizes we'll give away. Tyler Boyd expected in the 7 o'clock hour, and a lot to deal with between now and 9 o'clock. I can't imagine how John Ross feels on a day like this, watching the film review and seeing. It's one thing to do it, but then the next day to see what it looks like on tape, I think I'd be squirming a little bit if I were him.
Yeah, it had to be a tough day for him. And I want to make clear that the reason the Bengals lost the game was not John Ross. It wasn't just John Ross. I don't want to make him out to be, you know, the son of the devil and, you know, John Ross is everything anti-football or whatever. There were a lot of mistakes made by a lot of people. So it's never just one guy. It's never just one play. But when you're watching those plays, and I remember Paul Brown, Tiger Johnson, when I was playing, head coach and position coach, when there was a scenario like that, the whole team would be sitting in the meeting room, and they'd have the film projector queued up to the play, and they'd run it forward and backwards 10 times without saying a word. Forward, backward. Forward, backward, and your whole team's sitting there watching. And if you have a bad look on that film or that tape, you start to sink in your chair. and they not only run it, they have an arrow, they have the pointer. They put the pointer on the culprit, and they run it forward and backward. So I don't know what they do these days, but in the old days, back in the day, that's what was done. And to make an impression, you can't let your peers down. You know, you have to play at a high level of intensity and at least finish the plays, you know. That's all you're asked to do. Marvin had a slogan just a couple years ago, do your job. And Andy Dalton in the post game, his comment was, everybody has to do their job. If everybody does their job, you have a fighting chance, you know, to win each and every snap. When guys don't do their job, You have breakdowns, you have issues. So that's the bottom line, is just do what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, how you're supposed to do it, and you can win a lot of football games.
Yeah, the first one was your classic 50-50 ball. That ball's there, somebody, but you've got to win that battle. You've got to. There's no other answer in that equation. The other guy can't catch that pass.
That's what you have to look at it as. You have to say, when I go up, as a wide receiver, you're instructed to attack the football. So if you can, I mean, if the ball's near you, if it's in your zip code, you have to go attack the football. And in so doing, if you can't make the play, you have to make damn sure well, this is any receiver, has to make damn sure well the defender doesn't make the play. And if he has a better chance to make the play, you have to reverse roles and you have to become the defensive back and swat, strip, hit, do fight and scratch, do everything you possibly can. You cannot make it an uncontested interception. It's just, that's just not the way, that's not the code of ethics, I guess, you know. And honestly, too, I've never met a receiver or played with a receiver that didn't come back to the huddle and say to the quarterback, I'm open, even when he's double covered. Throw me the ball, I'm open. You can't run down the football field and decide, I'm covered, he's not throwing to me, I just can stop running my route. You can't do that. I mean, if you're, even if you're, even if there's two guys around you, he was the first read on that play. He was the first option. And he never looked anywhere else. He saw that he had a guy running like John can run, thought he had a chance to give him a look at it, threw it, and the result wasn't good. So you can't assume like, oh man, there's a guy and there's another, he's not throwing to me, I'm just going to stop. No, can't do it. And it's happened more than once. He has to break that habit. That's a very bad habit that he has to break for sure.
Does this then lend itself to a thought process of, well, let's see what Cody Kaur can do, or let's present slivers of opportunities to others if John isn't going to take advantage, not just not take advantage, but hurt us when given his?
That's a tough decision. You know, it's like, okay, if we do that, have we lost John Ross for good? If we don't do that, is it in the best interest of the football team based on what the football team just saw? So, those are coaching decisions that, you know, the position coach, the coordinator, the head coach, the organization, everybody's going to talk about, and they'll approach it with the best course. I'm sure they're probably going to sit down with John Ross and on multiple levels and talk it through. And, you know, do you say one chance and you don't get a second? I mean, honestly, maybe this is the turning point for his career. Maybe it's like, okay, I've hit the bottom. This now is going to be my impetus to change my whole approach to how I'm, you know, being a professional and what I'm doing, and I'm going to change things, and I'm going to be the most reliable teammate that you can possibly have, because that's the thing. We always talk about abilities, you know, speed, size, strength, all that. But with teammates, real important abilities are reliability, accountability, availability, all those abilities. And if your team's not sure, and it, particularly your quarterback, if your quarterback has second thoughts when he's trying to cut it loose to you, like, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to, you know, what are you doing this play? You have to have no doubt in your mind that that receiver is going to be where you expect him to be, when you expect him to be there, and he's going to fight for you. He's going to fight for the football and fight for his team.
And as you say that, to me, it would be a lot easier for that to be the case if we hadn't discussed various points of John Ross a year ago. Because
right.
the route that he cut off, I'm trying to remember, I think it was the Tennessee game. At that point, coming back to the huddle, if I'm Andy Dalton, my message is, don't do that to me again.
Right.
This is the last time you're going to do that to me. And now, 1 year later, I mean, there's a lot of time that it has passed and a lot that's been written about John Ross that led people to believe this is the new John Ross. Weight lifted off the shoulders, into the playbook. He's happy. The pressure is off his shoulders. Now we're going to see it. And this feels like last season in stages. That's what's disappointing to me.
What do you think Jalen Ramsey would be thinking if he were going to play against John Ross? What do you think some of these cornerbacks are going to start to do to John Ross? John has opened up a can of worms where these players and coaches are going to look at the tape and they're going to say, I'm making up examples that this may not be the case. Maybe it has happened. I guess if everybody goes back and scrubs the tape, you're going to find things on everybody. But with him, it might be, when the ball is going over to the loaded side of the formation and they're running a little combo route over there, he jogs off the line of scrimmage. He's not even running. Yeah. He's not even running his route. He's doing this. He's doing it. Now they start to – you're under a microscope, a telescope, a periscope, an arthroscope. You're being examined by everybody and everything. And you have nobody to blame but yourself. So the thing you have to do now – from this point forward is bust your rear end every single time you go out in the football field. It is not a right, it's a privilege to play football in the National Football League. Go out there and bust it every single snap, period. Period.
Still ahead, we'll talk with Tyler Boyd in the 7 o'clock hour. I want to get into the day turned in by Carlos Dunlap, who just continues to get hands on the football and bat him down. We'll do that as we continue. Dave Lapham, Lance McAllister, Bengals line from the Holy Grail Banks on the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and 700 WLW. 648 on 700 WLW. It's Bengals line from the Holy Grail Banks, First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham. Dave, a quick card before we talk with our special guests.
Yeah, let's talk about the McDonald's Pounder Play Recap, Lance. Pounder Play Recap brought to you by McDonald's. I'm loving it from the Cincinnati 25-yard line. First play of the second half. Touchback on the kickoff. Gio busted off right tackle for 23 yards. First and 10 at the Bengals 48-yard line. Gio went for 23. Gio went for 22. Giovanni Bernard gave you the effort that you expected from a pro's pro like Giovanni Bernard.
Let's welcome in our special guest who's kind enough to pick up the phone and spend a few minutes with us. He is the head coach of your 2-1 Cincinnati Bengals, Marvin Lewis. Coach, good evening.
Hello.
Hey, Coach.
Hello.
You know, when you go on the road and play a team like the Carolina Panthers, who I think from 2014, 15, whatever it was, they have the best home record except one team, the New England Patriots. Tough to beat them on the road. And you're in the game. I mean, it's tooth and nail. It's back and forth. But obviously, turnovers, you talk about it all the time. You go on the road and you go minus in the turnover department, and you're putting yourself behind the eight ball, aren't you?
Yeah, it's generally a difficult thing to overcome.
Coach, you didn't have an opportunity to run it a whole lot yesterday, but what did you see in your 13 carries, 66 yards yesterday?
Well, actually, we ran it a little bit more than that, Lance, but we felt pretty good about the run game other than probably one time where we had a minus yardage play. We have to, the penalties, two penalties brought back two runs, and we had some passes off of runs, but so, you know, we got to keep building on that and do a good job. Every week's a new week. So just because you have some success one week doesn't guarantee it the next. We just have to keep building, and you apply it to each opponent, and every opponent is different.
You know, you mentioned Andy threw the ball off of some of those run looks, the RPO. Everybody's talking about RPOs. It's very predominant around the league. Andy Dalton is about as good at it as anybody, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very good at it, and, you know, makes good decisions with it, and, you know, he was accurate in the throws, and our guys did, you know, a good job all but once. One of those was not a good play for us.
We're going to talk with Tyler Boyd coming up in our second hour tonight. What is the difference in Tyler Boyd this year from Tyler Boyd last year?
Well, he's playing with a lot of confidence right now, and he's doing a really good job, and, you know, he's been a big part of the offense, and you know, we made the move to let Brandon LaFell go to clear the path for Tyler, and he's taken full advantage of that.
You know, Coach, your three tight end package has paid tremendous dividends for you this season. You got in this game, you got double digit catches from the tight end position, over 100 yards, touchdown to C.J. Uzama. I mean, they all made nice plays for you in catching the football as well as blocking, didn't they?
They did. They all were, you know, made plays in the passing game, as you mentioned, and you know, a couple of them were big field position plays where, you know, we got us out of a hole and so forth and overcame the penalty, and you know, so those are big plays in the game, and you know, Tyler and Tyler Croft and CJ are also giving us productive snaps and special teams.
The Falcons were involved in a wild one yesterday. They lose in overtime. What are your early impressions of the Atlanta Falcons?
Well, you know, the best word to say on offense, both being able to run the ball and the high speed throwing with Matt Ryan, a very good job. He uses the whole field, every receiver. So you got to do a great job. And then defensively, you want to stay ahead of the count for them. You don't want to allow them to get on defense where they can tee off on you.
You know, you see a genetic marvel at quarterback with Cam Newton this past week, and then you go to see another genetic marvel at wide receiver, Julio Jones with the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, both of these guys are like, are you kidding me? That guy's a quarterback. Are you kidding me? That guy's a wide receiver. It's amazing in the National Football League, isn't it?
Well, that 2011 draft class was pretty strong.
Ooh, you ain't kidding. No doubt. No doubt. I mean, it really is unbelievable. And then you go from the style of offense that Carolina was running, you know, with Cannon McCaffrey, to north to south pole, you know, with Ryan throwing it all over the field, five touchdown passes. I mean, life's crazy from week to week in the NFL.
It is, and, you know, but they involved the run and the pass, and they utilized the back a lot in their pass game, and he provides an outlet, and he's a great run-after-catch guy. So you really have to be conscious of everything.
Coach, we appreciate it. Thanks for visiting with us tonight and put together a good one down there against Atlanta.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Good night.
Marvin Lewis checking in by phone tonight following a 31-21 loss in advance of the Bengals and the Falcons on Sunday. I left off. I wanted to talk about Carlos Dunlap, not to be lost in the shuffle of everything that took place. Carlos had an impact yesterday and continues to get that big paw up there and bat down passes and the athleticism. He does things you just look and you say, the size, the athletic, it shouldn't be that way, but he gets it done. He's fun to watch.
He's another genetic freak.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you look at him, his arms look like they're 50 inches long.
Yes.
I mean, he looks like Inspector Gadget, you know? and he gets, once he gets them up, I mean, I don't know how quarterbacks try to throw. They can't throw the ball over him. They have to throw it around him. And he's got five passes defense now, most by any player that's not a defensive back in the NFL. So Carlos Dunlap, when you look at those scenarios, everybody talks about in the secondary, hey, get your hands on the football. You know, knock the ball down. Get your hands on the ball. Shoot, he's doing it before it gets past the line of scrimmage. And that's got to be frustrating to quarterbacks. There's nothing worse than, oh, man, I had him, but Dunlap got me, man. I mean, he was 5 yards open. That's a big play. And Carlos swats it to the turf. It's great.
I have 1 minute before a break, Dave. I have time for a card if you'd like to do one.
Yeah, let's
squeeze one in.
Let's do that.
A little audible. How about that?
Yeah, I love it, Lance. I love it. Your RPO, outstanding. Remember when the Bengals defense scores or records more than two sacks in a game, you save $6 on Mike's Ultimate Wash, only at Mike's Car Wash, the official car wash of the Bengals. Mike's will also donate $1 of your purchase to the Marvin Lewis Community Fund. So far, $9,169 for the fund. Unfortunately, nothing cooking, only one quarterback sack, Carlos Dunlap's tomahawk chop. But here's the totals, defensive pass rush stats, hurries, knockdowns, all that sort of thing. One sack, strip sack, Carlos on Cam. Sam Hubbard had it, slipped out from under him. Cam falls on it at the Carolina 28-yard line. It would have been a short field at the 28-yard line. They got one sack, three tackles for loss, two quarterback hurries, two passes defensed. Carlos had one of those as well. Cam went 15 of 24, 150 yards is all they threw for. Two touchdowns, no interceptions, 108 quarterback rating. How about it? Unfortunately, it's raining tonight, so it would have been bad to try to wash your car today anyway.
Yes.
There's a silver lining to every storm.
There is. There absolutely
that's
is.
Right.
All right, that's an eventful first hour put in the books. We'll turn the corner in hour number two. Tyler Boyd will join us on the stage. Bengals line from the Holy Grail Banks, First Star Logistics, Bengals Radio Network, and 700 WLW.